LA Talk Radio thanks you for being a listener. Did you know you too can host your own radio show with us? Go to our site at latalkradio.com or email info@latalkradio.com right now and start your show today.
Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rockland, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there, welcome to the Dr. Nina Show. I'm Dr. Nina Savelle Rockland. I am a psychoanalyst specializing in the psychology of eating, and I'm here to help you break free of the diet trap and lose weight without dieting. That means no more counting calories or carbs, no more thinking about food all the time. It really is possible to lose weight and gain health, all without ever going on another diet. If you'd like to call in and talk with me, the number is 818-602-4929, 818-602-4929, and you can also tweet me at WinTheDietWar. So the topic of the day is stop the fat talk, as in stop right now, giant red stop sign, stop. Stop the fat talk. It's so important. So here are a couple of quotes that I really love. I think you're going to like them too. One of them is, if you talk to your friends the way you talk to your body, you'd have no friends left. Isn't that great? Oh, so perfect. Another is, quote, you are not fat. You have fat. You also have fingernails. You are not fingernails. Ha! Love it. I love it. I love those quotes. So one thing that you can do for yourself right away, something you can do right now to feel better immediately, is to stop the fat talk about yourself. And if you don't know what fat talk is, it's saying mean things about your body or about other people's bodies. So do you say things like, oh, my thighs are huge. Oh, look at my stomach. Oh, I'm so gross. If you say anything remotely like that, that's fat talk. So a while back, I was in some store trying on clothes, and I could hear the women in the dressing room next to me. And one of them was saying, look, I don't even have abs anymore. I have rolls. I could hide small children in my stomach rolls. And the other one was like, oh, you think you're bad? I look like I ate a small child. And her friend responded, no, 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 you look great. I'm a planet. And I'm thinking, oh, my God. God, these women are talking about themselves as if they are circus freaks. I mean, so I admit I had to see for myself what they actually look like. So I timed my exit from the dressing room so I could see. And you know what? In reality, these were two healthy, attractive, normal-looking women in their 30s. And trust me, neither of them looked as if they were about to go into orbit. So why the fat talk? And then after that, I'm walking through the mall, and I passed this group of teenage girls, and they were trash-talking some other girl named Angelica. And they were saying things like, I don't know whatever the dude's name was, I don't know what he sees in Angelica, she's such a cow. And the other one was like, I know, like total whale. So in the space of about 20 minutes, I heard women and girls refer to themselves or others as planets, cows, and whales. What is up? What is up with this fat talk? Fat talk is terrible. This kind of talk makes you feel bad about yourself. And it reduces you, if you'll pardon the expression, it reduces you or other people to just body parts. And you know what? We are more than just parts of our bodies. And you know what? We're not whales or cows either. And that goes for men as well as women. I saw this quote on Instagram once. It was very repost-worthy, so I actually posted it as well. And this quote said, if he's only interested in your legs, breasts, or thighs, send him to KFC. Cute, right? But you know what? I think when it comes to being objectified, so many women and men mostly women, so many women are doing it to themselves and thinking that their size is what makes them special, thinking that the person in the mirror is the only one that matters. And we've got to stop that. We've got to stop that as individuals, as a culture, as a society. We've got to start being nicer to ourselves and others. So for one thing, remember, you are so much more than the person in the mirror, right? It's important. No, it's crucial. It's vital. It's imperative to value yourself for who you are. And the size of your stomach or thighs, guess what? That doesn't define you. What defines you is your intellect, the size of your compassion, not the size of your genes. So, you know, judge how much you give, not how much you weigh. Count the number of friends you have, not the number on the scale. And also, put a moratorium on discussing body size and shape. Just stop talking about your body. Stop talking about your size. Try it just for a day, just for one day, just for the rest of today. See how many times you say things or think things about your body and just see that giant stop sign and just stop. So if you weren't talking badly about your body, I wonder what would be on your mind. Maybe you'd be having some problems at work. Maybe you're worried about your kids. Maybe you're mad at your husband, your wife, your boyfriend, your girlfriend. Maybe you're concerned about someone in your life. Maybe you miss someone who's moved away or passed away. Maybe you're dissatisfied with some aspect of your life. Fat talk keeps you turning on yourself and distracting from some other difficult thoughts and emotions that need your attention. And I want to share something with you. This is an interview with J.K. Rowling. For anyone who may have just awakened from a cryonic sleep or been in a coma or on a deserted island for the last few decades, J.K. Rowling is the creator of the Harry Potter books. She says, and I quote, "Fat is usually the first insult a girl throws at another girl when she wants to hurt her." I mean, is fat really the worst thing a human being can be? Is fat worse than vindictive, jealous, shallow, vain, boring, or cruel? Not to me, but then you might retort, what do I know about the pressure to be skinny? I'm not in the business of being judged on my looks, what with being a writer and earning my living by using my brain. And then she goes on to tell the story of how she went to the British Book Awards, and she bumped into this woman that she hadn't seen for a few years. And the first thing the woman said to her was, "Wow, you've lost a lot of weight since the last time I saw you." I guess it was England, so it'd be more like, "Oh, you've lost a lot of weight." Anyway, J.K. Rowling told this woman that the last time they had seen each other, she, J.K., had just had a baby. She said, "What I felt like saying was, I've produced my third child and my sixth novel since I last saw you. Aren't either of these things more important, more interesting than my size? But no, my waist looked smaller. Forget the kid in the book. Finally, something to celebrate." She goes on to say that she's got two daughters who will have to make their way in this skinny, obsessed world, and it worries her because she does not want them to be empty-headed, self-obsessed, emaciated clones. She would rather that they be independent, interesting, idealistic, kind, opinionated, original, funny, a thousand things before thin, she says. And then she says, very colorfully, I must say, she says, quote, "I'd rather they didn't give a gust of stinking chihuahua flatulence whether the woman standing next to them has fleshier knees than they do. Let my girls be Hermione's rather than Pansy Parkinson's." Honestly, I think we should all stop giving a gust of stinking chihuahua flatulence about this. Actually, you know, having a Great Dane, the greater gust would be the great stinking Great Dane flatulence is a lot more. We should not give a damn about all of this. We should be independent, interesting, idealistic, kind, opinionated, original, funny people. Who's with me? If you'd like to call in and talk with me, the number is 818-602-4929. Again, that's 818-602-4929. 4929, and you can tweet me at Win the Diet War. So the next step in stopping the fat talk is to consider what you like and appreciate about yourself. And also, if you absolutely have to talk about your physical self, choose something you like. Everyone has something about themselves that they like. They maybe like their eyes, maybe you like your smile, your height. Try to reframe the negative thoughts you have. Maybe your thighs aren't huge. Maybe they are strong enough to get you where you need to go. I have a friend who had twins, and she nursed them. She nursed both twins as if she would, both of them, as if she would only nurse one of them. Anyway, she nursed these twins for over a year, which was quite a feat of timing and endurance on her part. And nursing two babies for a year left her with what she called National Geographic boobs. But you know what? She didn't say it like it was a bad thing. She was proud. She was actually proud of those National Geographic boobs. Her body had fed her children, and that was something she felt really good about. I had another friend who just hated her stomach, just hated it, and would constantly say, oh, I'm going to get liposuction. I'm going to do something. I'm going to do a 1,000 crunches a day. I got to get rid of this stomach. And her kids started calling it a mommy pillow because they liked to lie down and put their head on her stomach, and it was nice and soft, and it was a mommy pillow. And it really changed the way she felt about it. She did not love her stomach, but she felt better about it. She kind of reframed it rather than a gross, squishy, disgusting mess. It was, a soft place for her kids to land. So remember that thoughts lead to feelings, which lead to behavior. When you call yourself fat, when you say mean things about your body or yourself, you're going to feel terrible. And when you feel terrible, you're more likely to turn to food for comfort or distraction. And I have a caller, so hold on. Hi, caller. This is Dr. Nina. Who am I talking to?
This is Nick, the scale, Nick.
Nick, the scale and the walking. How are you?
Yes. All right, but you hit something this morning about thinking about something else about your weight. Don't think about your weight. And it hit me about the standing on the scale and not do it, which is impossible for me right at this time. But think about something else other than your weight. And it frustrates me. And I have a situation here that I'm very frustrated where I live. And I live with someone who is messy. And it drives me crazy because I never lived in a messy home. And it's so frustrating for me, and I put a lot of energy, and I'm wondering if I think about something like that, will it avoid the standing on the scale, or will it add to standing on a scale in the morning?
Well,
like to have your opinion on something like that.
That's a great question. I have a couple of questions for you. And it's not, just think about something else. It's think about what you would be thinking about. Because if you weren't thinking about your weight or any of that, if you weren't distracting yourself with those thoughts, what might it be? And what you thought of was this messy home. Now, my question is, you said you live with someone, is this a roommate? Is this someone who you're romantically?
No, it's my girlfriend.
It's your girlfriend.
My girlfriend, yes.
Okay, now, so how messy is messy? Give us a sense of what you're talking about, because some people say messy when, something is just a little bit out of place. You're like, wait, that coaster is tilted and it should be straight. That's messy. Other people have a different idea of messy. So can you describe what you mean by messy?
It's messy. There's newspapers around. Every table has things on it. The bedroom is all over the place. You know, if you want to put a plate down in the kitchen, there's no place to put it down. If you walked in, you'd say to yourself, boy, this is really a mess. How do they live in this situation?
So that does sound very messy and difficult, and it almost sounds like not a full-on hoarder situation, but kind of like that. If you have no counter space to put a plate down, and you have stuff piled over, would you?
Right. I would never invite someone over to have dinner here.
Oh, okay.
It would bother. Okay.
Yeah, right. Okay. All right. So you're saying that you live with your girlfriend, and she's the messy one, and she's created this very
One other thing. We had one size apartment. It was a nice size apartment, and the place was messy. So we decided, they said, let's move to a bigger apartment. So we won't have it. Well, it's just that we have a bigger mess now.
So the mess did not get... Okay, so you moved apartments to deal with the mess, but the mess just got bigger. The mess is...
Right.
It's like women who have purses, handbags, like no matter how big it is, you can always find something to fill it. I get it. Okay. So here you are. This is clearly a problem, and it sounds like she also recognizes it's a problem. You went to the extent of moving to a different place because you thought with bigger space you'd have less mess, but instead with a bigger space you have more mess. This is not how you want to live. You can't put a plate down. You can't invite friends over. This is a really bad problem, and I would say this is probably something that is weighing on you that you're not thinking about if you're looking at the scale and saying, oh, have I gained a pound or lost a pound? You know, would you say that this is something that is difficult and painful to think about because it has implications possibly for your relationship? I mean, if she can't clean up the mess and kind of organize herself and the place in a different way, and I trust that this is nothing to do with, like, I'm sure you, from what you're telling me, you're neat guy and someone who's neat and wants things to be organized. It doesn't matter what you do, it still gets undone. Is that
right?
Yeah.
Right.
Okay, so you're feeling helpless and powerless in the situation, and what are your thoughts about what's going to happen to the relationship or what's going to happen to your living situation? And I just want to say, there's someone trying to call right now. If you can hear me, can you please call back once I speak with Nick? Because I have no way to put you on hold. So, Nick, what's going to happen if this situation is not rectified?
It's just another situation that I'm not prepared to deal with now.
So it's upsetting and scary.
Yeah. And I don't know. I really don't know.
Well,
so it's just something I'm dealing with, and you know, it's just something that, you know, I don't know if it has anything to do with my weight or who, I don't know. It's just been affecting it, and then I don't know. I'm just a little confused about it, but I'm wondering if it has anything to do with the weight, or maybe thinking about, you know, myself with the weight.
Yes, and I think it has. From what you're telling me, I suspect it has everything to do with it, because it is really hard. It's really hard to think, I'm frustrated with my girlfriend. The extent to which you went moving where you live to accommodate this. It's a big problem, and she might need to figure out why she creates a mess. Often people who feel messy inside, they create messy environments to reflect their internal mess. So maybe something is going on with her that is causing her to be this messy. But it is a lot harder to say, oh my God, this is a problem. This is a problem that affects my living space, how I feel. I can't have people over. You're going to be resentful, I'm guessing. And all kinds of feelings that might scare you. It's a lot easier to say, oh, look at how much I weigh, than it is to look at what's weighing on you, especially when it involves your relationship.
Well, I'd like to solve the problem if it could be, if I can.
You can't. You can't solve it. You can only facilitate her resolving it. You can only help her get some help with this. Because what you're describing goes beyond just sort of everyday lived in, you know, your place looks a little lived in. No, it sounds like it's a mess. And which affects how you feel, too. And then you feel powerless and helpless. And then what do? You decide to control your weight. So you can see that it's a solution to all of this chaos of the mess. Is your girlfriend willing to explore this, maybe go to therapy or go to Clutters Anonymous, you know, something that can help her?
I don't know.
Well, that might be the first step, is to really let her know just how awful this is and how untenable it is, how it's you can't go on like this, right? And that something must be done, and then you can help her to resolve why she's making the mess. And then she will, you know, hopefully things will change. I'm so glad to hear from you. You're quite the regular caller, and I appreciate hearing from you. Please let me know next week. Keep us posted.
I will definitely let you know. Thank you once again. I really appreciate it.
You're so welcome, Nick. Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Oh. You know, it's interesting, that kind of messiness is a lot like, anything, relationship to food, relationship to messiness. It's a weed, and you got to get to that root. And here's my other caller. Hi, caller. This is Dr. Nina. Who am I talking to?
Hi, Dr. Nina. This is Christina.
Hi, Christina.
It's so good to speak with you, and your topic today at the very beginning of the show really struck a chord with me in terms of society and going out and listening to what women say to each other. And it's not just women, it's women and men, and just sort of the disparaging remarks about body. And I'm someone who, I always wondered my whole life, why do I place such a huge emphasis on my appearance and on my weight? Overly, too much of an emphasis. And in taking some of your advice and trying to think as to, oh, it's really not just about the weight and the appearance, what's really eating at you, I have a story to share, and maybe if I could get your opinion on whether or not I'm redirecting my thinking, and stop me if it's too intimate. I will tell you, it's a very personal story. Is that all right?
That is all right, and I appreciate your willingness to be vulnerable. So,
sure. Yeah. Well, you know, you are such a great role model. I feel very comfortable doing this with you, and I appreciate your listening. So, my dad passed away this past year, and during that time, it's interesting, when somebody passes away, a lot of problems in the family can arise at that time. And in speaking with my mom, because I was asking for her help on this eating disorder that I have, bulimia specifically, something came up, and she had referred to this, and I do remember parts of it. I remembered parts of it in my childhood. I was 6 years old, and there was a huge blow up in my house. There was physical violence by my father and a lot of verbal abuse, and he was about to leave us, meaning my mom, myself, and my brother, who was 9 months old at the time. So my mom had given birth 9 months ago. And he was leaving us, the family, for another woman, bottom line. And that's what he said. And my mom, you know, filled in a lot of gaps for me because I was only six, so I remember snippets of it. And it turns out, and it's heartbreaking, but she begged him to stay and asked, you know, what can I do? I will do anything. What can I do? And his response was, you look like a cow. You need to lose a lot of weight. Nothing about I need this or that. Mm. It was about weight and appearance. And upon filling that in, I absolutely do remember it. So in trying to analyze this, I'm thinking it makes sense now for me that I think perhaps if I feel I don't look a certain way or am a certain weight, that the closest people in my life will abandon me. What are your thoughts on that?
I think that's a wonderful bit of self-analysis, Christina. Yes, I think that it's very likely that you, even at the age of six, absorbed some of the message that if you're not attractive, you're either attractive and or you're a cow, you know. Mm-hmm. And so that being not attractive meant you were going to be rejected, and then people who think that they're rejected feel rejectable. And so right. In your very young mind, I think it's highly likely that you fuse those notions together that, hey, I better look this way, otherwise no one's going to want me.
Right.
Something like that, yeah.
And now I'm in the process of, it's a little scary because I'm in my mid-40s and I'm thinking, oh my gosh, number one, am I ever going to be able to turn this tenet of my being around? Intellectually, I know absolutely that's the wrong way to think, that success and lovability and likability and not being abandoned does not equate to appearance. But feeling-wise, it's ingrained. It's a knee-jerk reaction. That is at my core. And I'm, you know, obviously trying to work through it, whether it's therapy, self-help books, speaking to my mom or my family, limiting sometimes mm-hmm. speaking to the mom. Any additional ideas as to, you know, it's such a huge revelation, such a huge sad, some anger. You know, he's passed away. I can't speak with him about it.
But you can speak to him. You can speak to him, and you could speak to the part of your mind that might have identified with that idea. Look, partly, I want to say this. There is a reality that appearance matters to an extent. If it didn't mm-hmm. matter, we wouldn't have fashion. We'd dress in
right.
burlap sacks. Our teeth would be, you know, gray, and we'd all have dreadlocks. I mean, there's just a reality. But it's the overprivileging our appearance as the thing that defines us. Like, you know, I tell my girls who are constantly being told how beautiful they are, it's like, hey, mm-hmm. you know what? It is nice to be beautiful. It's nice to be considered beautiful, but it
right.
doesn't make you a better person. Like, that's not what you, just right. sort of like what J.K. Rowling was said. You have to value who you are, otherwise you're just a beautiful shell. And so
right.
I think to be able to find a middle ground to say what matters about you is really not what you look like. That mattered to your father, who apparently
right.
saw women as objects. And he was
yeah.
willing to leave his nine-month-old son?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is... And his six-year-old daughter? I mean, it's pretty devastating.
Right.
So,
it
is. Yeah, so your father had this idea about women that was then reinforced by the culture. And your job is to not dismiss this entirely, not to say, looks don't matter. Of course they matter. But they're not
right.
all that matters.
Right. Right. Well, I thank you for letting me share that and get that off my chest. It was actually, you know, pretty cathartic for me to do that. But at the same time, yeah, my stomach is still in knots, and it's so painful, and it's so sad to think that. And you know what? Since he's passed away, there's guilt as well as, you know, oh my gosh, he was my dad. I shouldn't be thinking that way. But I also recognize that it was not my fault. I had nothing to do with the way he thinks. So I just thank you for, you know, allowing me to try to get off the food train and think about, you know, face these difficult situations and try to feel them. So I thank you for that.
You're welcome. I just want to say one thing and ask you another thing. So, you said that your stomach was in knots. What if you, so that's pain. So that's an example of, you know how I often say people convert emotional pain to physical, sometimes through eating. You know, I suggest that as painful as it is, you've got to convert that stomach pain into words.
Into words.
Like, if it wasn't physical pain, what kind of pain are we talking about? The other thing I want to say is, you said you shouldn't say that about your dead father. Well, I don't know why we think that just because someone is dead, somehow they become better than they were in life. My grandfather was a molester, and when he had his funeral, everyone was talking about him as if he walked on water. And I was just like, what? You know, I wanted to spit on his grave. So why do we say, oh, they're dead, so therefore they're off the hook for all the bad things that they said and did that and left a legacy of that with you? Not that they're all bad, but the painful, difficult, awful parts that they may be dead, but it's living on in you. So you, even though he is gone, you can still process and talk to him and challenge him and challenge his ideas, because some of them are still with you.
Right, as you've mentioned, he's still alive in my head, so absolutely. And thank you for sharing that story. I'm sorry to hear that, and I just identify with that, because with my mother, you know, my father is in some ways transformed into this, you know, mythical, godlike, can do no wrong kind of thing. Although I have to say and give her credit, she has identified some of the problems that did occur, which is a relief to me for her to acknowledge it. And I hate to use the word crazy, but to have two people in a household experience such different things is a little unsettling, because I know I was a child. However, she's come a long way in terms of being able to admit some of the things that have happened, and lo and behold, even apologize sincerely for them. So that's more than I think I could have asked for. But yeah, the whole passing away of a family member, it just brings up so many different interesting, painful and happy family issues. So thank you.
You're very welcome. And by the way, I suspect, having spoken to you, that this miracle of miracles apology has a lot to do with you facilitating a conversation with her. So I'm guessing that's what's happening. So good for you, Christina. Give yourself a pat on the back.
I will, and you guessed completely right. And your book helped me to also just begin to even think about facilitating a conversation. And to let you know, I've never had such a heart-to-heart with my mom in my life, and I'm mid-40s, and that's sad, but thank goodness it happened, you know?
Very powerful. Oh, thank you for sharing your story, your vulnerability, and keep us posted.
I will, and thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Bye.
Take
for
care.
Now. Bye.
Bye.
She's referring to, thank you, Christina. That was so sweet. She's referring to my book, Food for Thought, Perspectives on Eating Disorders, which is available on Amazon, where it is an Amazon bestseller. Just had to put that little plug in for myself. Okay. Let's talk about what happens after you stop the fat talk. Then it's time to size up your life and think about what's important, downsize what's not, and embrace your awesomeness. I can't speak. Embrace your awesomeness. Because think about it. You cannot weigh awesome. In my group last week, we were talking about, wouldn't it be cool to have a scale that you step on the scale and you look down, and instead of a number, it says something like, hey, you're awesome, you're terrific, you're smart, you're funny, you're kind, you're lovable. That's the kind of bathroom scale I want. Now, let's think about how we relate to other people. Like, do you know anyone who's just really terrific? Of course you do. So take a moment and consider what makes that person so amazing. Is it the size of their jeans, the gap between their thighs, their weight? No, that's probably a big no. What makes a person terrific is his or her integrity, intelligence, kindness, warmth, spirit, to name just a few awesome qualities. So in other words, you can't weigh awesome because it's a way, W-A-Y, of being, not a number. And let me ask you, think about the person that you like and respect the most. Now, I asked a lot of people that question a couple years ago. In fact, I asked thousands of people that question. I put it out to my Facebook subscribers, and I want to share some of the answers. So it was basically, who's the most awesome person you know and why? So some people said that their mom or dad was the most awesome person they knew, and would say, like, oh, they're always there for others, or they put their family first, or they know how to cheer people up and they don't judge. Others said it was their brothers or sisters, and they talked about their siblings' confidence, optimism, positivity, that they were good role models, they could be counted on to be there no matter what, unconditionally. Wow, that must be nice to have siblings like that. I hope y'all appreciate it if you have that. A lot of people said their friends were the most awesome people they knew. And they described their friends. I'm going to cut myself off and say hello to our next caller. Hi, caller. This is Dr. Nina. Who am I talking to?
Hi, Dr. Nina. This is Larry from beautiful downtown Burbank. How are you?
Larry from Burbank. How are you?
Good, good. Been listening to the calls, and they're very interesting, and the stuff you have to say just keeps hitting home. And by the way, I understand about clutter, but I also understand that food and clutter for me, and I think for everyone, are both just symptoms, not issues. And just cutting to the chase, I'm wondering how or why does a child internalize emotional abuse from others? How does he or she get out of that?
Well, it is called, there's a term for it, so it would be called identification with the aggressor, which is a very clinical term. And basically, look, you're a child. You're powerless, and the powerful person has all the power. So you get to choose either identify with yourself in your vulnerable powerlessness, or identify with the person who has the power, who is strong and scary often. But in that way, what happens is, you know, a relationship between you and another person becomes a relationship between you, different parts of yourself. And kids want to be, who wants to be powerless, right? You don't want to be on the floor shaking and covering your head and crying and feeling helpless. Better to be the powerful aggressor, abuser. Better to identify with that person, because it gives you that sense of, you know, well, not to repeat myself, but power. And that's sure. Much more compelling.
Okay. It sounds like, you know, how could our de facto gods, called our parents at that early age, be wrong? So what else can be wrong? It's just, you know, it must have been myself in a big way. It almost sounds like a more powerful version of the Stockholm syndrome, if you know what that is.
Yeah, of course, not Patty Hearst, but she also had that. Yes, here's what happens. And you said parents are gods to children, and indeed they are, you know, omniscient, omnipotent gods. So when a parent treats a child in an abusive way, or even in a way that causes pain, but you mentioned abuse, so let's say abuse, the child does not have the wherewithal to say, huh, My parent is acting abusive. There must be something in their past that's making them do this to me. They don't,
sure.
You know, and they're taking it out on me for some reason that's unbeknownst to me. They don't say that. Children say, my parent is abusing me. Therefore, they must know that there's something wrong with me. They kind of convert abuse to punishment.
Sure.
So, and they say, oh, I must be bad. They're treating me this way because I'm bad. Then they say, oh, if I'm bad, I just have to figure out what's wrong with me and make myself good. Then I'm going to get the good treatment. Then I'm not going to be abused once I make myself good. And this gives an illusion of hope for change because the idea is, wow, I have some power. I can change myself. I can become a good person. But the problem is they were never bad in the first place. And so this strategy for hope becomes a conviction of not good enoughness or that there's something wrong. And then they grow up thinking, God, I don't know what it is, but there's something just wrong with me. I can feel it. If you ask people,
right.
If I asked you, what's wrong, for example, with you? I don't know that, would you have a litany of things? Would you say, I'm this, 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 and this?
No, it's more of a core self sense that kind of pervades everything. I guess that's why, with the way you explain it, that's why so many adults, myself included, if something doesn't go right, even if it's minor, you know, my mind goes down that rabbit's hole to I am bad. Not that I forgot to fill up the gas tank, but I go right to I am bad, not that I did something wrong. Big difference.
Right. And or not, I feel bad. Yes. So what you're talking about is I am bad rather than I did something bad. I did something bad is guilt. Oh, I did a bad thing. What did I do wrong? Mm-hmm. I am bad is, oh, there's something wrong with me. And that is shame. Okay. And that is that pervasive core sense of, oh, there's something wrong and dark and unlovable about me, and I can't really say what it is, but it's there. And that we have to deconstruct it and say that it's an idea that you got from your interpretation of events in your childhood. So
now, can a therapist or even a person who's kind of strong-willed or insightful or just whatever has the wherewithal, can that process involve building up the good concurrently with breaking down the bad? And is that concurrent thing, maybe that's necessary to do both? I don't know.
It is, but you can't like let in the good until you get rid of the bad, because the bad is that's why I often say that the work that I do is like a psychological exorcism. You know, you've got to get the bad ideas out of your head and stop identifying with them as truths so that you have space and room to take in something good. So it is a concurrent process, but some of it is like stealthily. You're not actively taking in the good, but some part of you is listening. And then eventually that identification with the therapist's view of you, because therapy, what heals, in my opinion, what heals in therapy is not that you have all this information about yourself and you discuss it. What really is the most healing is that you have a new experience with a different person. So if you were abused and criticized and judged, and you have a therapist who says, you know what, you're likable, you're lovable, let's look at the things that we like about you, and the things that you don't like about you don't make you not lovable. Let's accept the whole you, and you get a different response, and you could take it in. Then you start treating yourself that way.
Okay. I mean, it sounds like, just speaking for myself, that the change that you're describing for me would have to be stealthy. I think it would be important that I don't realize it consciously, and I'm just grasping at straws here, but if I did, the core of me that still is, you know, the bad person that I learned and internalized will screw it up. So it has to be, you know, below my level of consciousness to kind of take root. And as such, I may be the last to know if there's any change going on. But, you know, I think that's a good thing.
Yes, and you're describing the power of the unconscious and how and how it's very hard because sometimes what you intellectually know is so at odds with what you know from a different part of you. Like you can know intellectually that Larry from Burbank, you know, you sound like a great guy. You're smart. You're it's super insightful. You're well spoken. You're articulate. You seem kind. You know, you're all of these things. You probably know that.
I'm also a snappy dresser, but you forgot.
Well, I appreciate snappy dressing. You're all of these things, and I'm sure you know it. And funny, too, even though maybe a little deflection with humor. I did think you spoke about that the last time you called.
Yes.
But maybe you don't feel those things. And so it doesn't matter intellectually what you know. That's why positive thinking ultimately doesn't work. You could say, I love myself. I'm lovable. Snarky tone, purposeful, by the way. You could say it a million times but you're not going to make yourself think differently if you don't think you're lovable. You have to go, why do I think I'm not lovable? What's wrong with me that I think is so terrible? Let me investigate that. And then when you realize that what you think is so terrible really isn't, then you don't need positive mantras because then you feel good about yourself.
Yeah, they always seemed like Bactine on an open wound, big open wound. It's like, nice try, but I think for some people who are sort of, quote, ripe for that change because they don't have that inner self-hate, it does work, which is why people talk about, you know, the post-it notes and all that.
Yes, and not everything works for everybody, and not everything doesn't work for everybody. So if it works, if you do the positive mantra, someone out there listening who's thinking, wait a minute, it works for me, then that's great. But for many people who have a sense of deficiency or defect within, even if they intellectually know they're not deficient nor are they defective, those mantras will not work. So... it's a matter of challenging the idea that there's something wrong with you. It's challenging the shame. You know?
Yeah. It's that inner core truth. What I had been doing is meditating on my past and past images of myself as a kid, a little bit older, and that just seems to feel good, just intuitively. So I keep doing that.
Do more of that. Larry from Burbank, do what feels good. If you are being kind to your little younger self, then maybe that's also undoing the damage of the past and of the abusive parent.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever you can do that's kind, that's a good thing. As long as you're listening.
Okay. Sounds good.
Well, keep us posted. I have all these regular callers now. It's so cool to hear week to week what's going on. So I'm sure.
Do what works. So here I am again.
Great. Well, I'll talk to you next week then. No pressure.
Sounds good.
All right.
Thank you much.
Thank you. Bye bye.
Bye bye.
Aw. So much insight out there. I'm so honored that people feel that they feel safe enough to call and talk about what's very painful and very vulnerable and very difficult. The more that you talk about it, the more you understand it, the more you understand why you're feeling what you're feeling, why you're doing what you're doing, then it lifts the shame, it lifts the guilt, and it gives you more clarity on yourself. Because if you're doing something you don't want to do, or you're not doing something you want to do, it's always, always for a reason. And once you get to that reason is the root underground. Once you get to that reason, everything changes. Sometimes those roots create weeds that are problems with food and eating. Sometimes those roots create clutter. Right? It comes from someplace that needs to be dug out and understood. That's how you get rid of it. And that's how you make peace with food and liberate your life so that you can feel good in your body, good in your life. And that's the goal, isn't it? So thank you all so much for joining me today. I am here every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific here on LA Talk Radio to give you the skinny on weight loss without dieting. And I'd love to hear from you, so call in or send me a message on Twitter or Facebook with any questions that you'd like me to cover on the show. And I will see you next week. Bye-bye.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.